speaking for the last 2 weeks since Sukkot, really, about the concept of why we're learning Torah, why specifically Gemara Bavli, why that came into play, and from that we understood the concept of almost a Mesorah going back down, and we understood the concept of a Rebbe, having a Rebbe, listening to a Rebbe, and understanding what he's there for and what he does for us. This, what we're going to speak about today, is Emunat Chacham. And this is a hard subject for anyone, especially for people who haven't grown up in a Sephardi household. And I mean that seriously. Sephardim have this to an extreme, to a very big extreme. And with the passing of Rav Avadia Yosef Zatzal, you can see the amount of people that were at his funeral were just, it's unbelievable, the amount of people that went there. The kavod that they have for Sephardim, they have for their chachamim, the way that they treat them, the way that they hold them in utter just esteem. And Hasidim as well, in the same vein, in the same way, the way they hold that their Rebbe is, as if Kiilu is all the way up there, as if it's just a Navi from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. It's something really to be emulated, to be understood, but to be emulated if you understand what's there. I can tell you a few stories, but one that deals with myself is specific. My brother Rafi was getting married. At the time, I was in the Mir Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and he was getting married on a Sunday. He was getting married on a Sunday. The Thursday before that Sunday was Tisha B'Av. So in the Mir Yeshiva, you got out. Yeshiva ended after Tisha B'Av, not Rosh Chodesh Av, but rather Tisha B'Av. So the question was, should I leave, right? How long should I stay? Should I leave during the 9 days and stay a little bit longer in yeshiva, spend a couple extra days in yeshiva, but you're really not supposed to travel during the 9 days? Or should I leave before Rosh Chodesh, which would take me away from about 6 or 7 days of learning, but that way I wouldn't travel during the 9 days? So I wasn't so sure what to do, so I asked the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir, Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel. I went into him and I had a connection with him. So I went in and I asked him, what's the best thing to do? Is the best thing for me to leave before the 9 days or during the 9 days? So the Rosh Yeshiva told me, leave before the 9 days. Leave before Rosh Chodesh. His specific words were, before Rosh Chodesh. So I came out and I said, okay, before Rosh Chodesh I can do. And understood it completely. And I went back and I started telling people about it. And a friend of mine who was in the Mir Yeshiva at the time, a friend of Rabbi Sheinfeld's as well, Moishi Brandon, when I told him the psak, so to speak, that Rav Nosson Tzvi had given me, so he said, there's no way you heard that correctly. You misheard him. You misunderstood him. There's no way he told you to leave before Rosh Chodesh. He must have told you to leave during the 9 days. You just misunderstood him. And it's hard. Sometimes Rav Nosson Tzvi was not easy to listen to. Sometimes you couldn't hear him directly. But I was pretty sure that that's what he told me. I said, I'm not going back. Moishi said, for sure. You have to go back. You have to hear it again because it's not what he said. So I went back. And I said to Rav Finkel, I said, I'm sorry that I have to bring this up again, but there are those who are in the yeshiva who have told me that I made a mistake and that the Rosh Yeshiva really told me to leave during the 9 days. Can I ask again, does Rebbe think I should leave before the 9 days or during the 9 days? He said to me again, this was left without, he said, before 9. That's all he said. He couldn't say much else after that. So I said, I don't want to ask this to the Rosh Yeshiva, and I'm sorry to do this, but if somebody asks me again, can I ask why? And he said, one word, sakana. That's the word that he gave me on that. Now, I checked. There were no planes that crashed during those 9 days, during the 9 days that I was there. There's nothing that I know of, at least, that happened during those days. There's nothing crazy that happened during that time. But Emunas Chachamim really is taking what your Rosh Yeshiva said, or taking what your Rebbe said, and understanding it to a different level. That he is giving you a psak for you, as opposed to everybody else. That he understands you, he understands the situation, he understands halacha, and he takes it all into account and puts it right there. The famous story with Emunas Chacham is the Rav Shalom Shwadron story. You all know Rav Shalom Shwadron. He's well known from the Magid series that Rav Pesach Kron became so famous for. The Magid walks, the Magid talks, the Magid speaks, the Magid everything. All the different Magid books that Rav Pesach Kron has, every single one dealt with the Rav Shalom Shwadron, who was the Magid of Yerushalayim, a tremendous, tremendous person. And Rav Shalom Shwadron had a son. One of his sons got whooping cough. Now this is Yerushalayim in the 1950s about, early 1950s. Getting whooping cough in Yerushalayim in the 1950s meant there was no hope. There was nothing he could do. Yerushalayim was very, very scared for his child. He brought his child to Bnei Brak to go see the Chazon Ish. Not an easy trip back then, but took his son to go see the Chazon Ish. He brought him to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish said, you know, eucalyptus leaves are very good for whooping cough, to be able to heal you from whooping cough. So the eucalyptus tree in the middle of a little lake in the middle of Ramat Gan, go to Ramat Gan, rent a boat, go around the lake a little bit, and hopefully the whooping cough will be cured. And Rishon Shodron led his son out from where he was, brought him straight to the boat, brought him out into the middle of the lake, and brought him around. And the whole time he was saying, Mitzvah lahamin lahamin b'chachamin, Mitzvah lahamin b'chachamin, and he brought him around, little by little, just brought him around the island a little bit. And after an hour, his son's whooping cough was completely gone. Never recurred, never came back. Son was perfectly fine. As they're rowing back to shore, his son looks at his father and says, Abba, this is unbelievable. We have the refuah for whooping cough. We no longer have to worry about that. And our Yisrael will tell everybody to take a boat ride around the eucalyptus trees in Ramat Gan, and we won't have any problem. Everybody will be cured of whooping cough. Rishon turned to his son and said, do you think the eucalyptus leaves healed you? This is not eucalyptus leaves, this is the Chazon Ish. The only reason why it worked is because we had Emunas Chachamim. And Emunas Chachamim allowed the eucalyptus leaves to be the method for the refuah to happen. That's it. That's the way it goes. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling because we no longer have people around like Rav Moshe Feinstein or Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, Rav Shach. Even Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, these Gedolim aren't alive anymore. They've been gone for 20 years, 25, 30 years, something like that. But I'm sure that their generation, that were living at the same time as the Safar Rebbe and Rav Moshe and Rav Yaakov, I'm sure at the same time they said, well, we don't have the same Gedolim as yesteryear, like the Chazon Ish and the Stifler, Rav Aaron Cutler, the Brisker Rav, the Ponovitcher Rav, but they aren't alive again. And before that, the Chafetz Chaim, Rav Chaim Moser Gradinsky, the Rav Chaim Brisk, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, and you bring yourself all the way back. You can bring yourself to the middle 1800s. They said, oh, there's no Chassam Sofer anymore. Chassam Sofer said there's no Gra anymore. The Gra said that you can bring yourself back. Every generation, you're never going to have the likes of which they, and next, in the next generation, they're going to say, well, we no longer have a Rav Chaim Kanievsky. We no longer have a Rav Yashin, Rav Matisyo Solomon. We no longer have a Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, Rav Aaron Leib Steinman. The next generation is going to say the exact same thing, because the fact is, Gedolim of each generation are based on how we are, what that generation deserves. And what we deserve, that's how our Gedolim are to us. And for that reason, the Gedolim that we have today perfectly match what we need for things to go well. See, here's the deal. And what is Chachamim? It's not that, if only we had this person, then I would believe him. If only that person were alive today, then everything would be okay. That's not Emunas Chachamim. That's heebie-jeebies. That's nevuah. That's understanding things in a totally different light. And what is Chachamim is understanding that there is a conduit for a Kadosh Baruch Hu's word in this world. And that somehow a Kadosh Baruch Hu does give us messages, and those messages are more attuned to what we need. They're more in line with where we are. They're more there. They're part of our system through what the Gedolim are saying. That takes work also. But that's the concept of Emunas Chachamim. I'm going to quote Rav Dessler in Michtav Meliyahu. Michtav Meliyahu, Rav Dessler was asked a question by a bitter fellow. Bitter fellow wrote him a letter, and he's writing back, Rav Dessler. And the man is putting the blame for the Holocaust in World War II on the Gedolim of Europe. That they didn't tell their constituents, all the people in Europe, they didn't tell them to get out while there was still time. Put all the blame on the big rabbis of Europe and said it's all their fault. People asked if they should leave, and they sometimes said no, sometimes they didn't say anything, and because they didn't tell them to leave, it's their fault. So Rav Dessler was writing back to that. Now, if that guy was writing to me, then I think the simple answer is no one is a Navi. I think that's the simple answer, right? The simple answer is no one is a Navi. Number two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the Holocaust to happen. That's clear as day. So he hid it from those great Gedolim. Number three, maybe they never told people to say. I don't know. Maybe that would be the type of answers that I would come up with, but I'm not Rav Dessler. Rav Dessler wrote back, and he didn't answer the question. He didn't answer it. His letter back is all about the way to view Emunas Chacham, the Torah's view of Emunas Chacham. He goes through his own experiences working with unbelievable Talmidei Chachamim and explaining how they worked through things and how they somehow knew things that somehow happened, or the way things went and how he understood it, how they had Ruach HaKodesh, so to speak, that allowed them to do certain things that there's no way they could have known, or there's no way they could have been involved with. And he ends with, see, my sight and my thoughts, says Rav Dessler, are null and void in comparison to their clarity and how they understand things. It's our Yetzer Hara that's whispering in our ear that says, don't you see he made a mistake? You don't have to follow him. You don't have to listen to anything he says. And then he brings a proof. Brings a proof to this idea. And we spoke about it a little bit last week, and it's based on Rav Simcha Zissel of Kelm. Simcha Zissel of Kelm says the following. He says, Mordechai begged the Jews not to go to the Purim Suda. Not to go to that Suda that Ahasuerus was making. Told them, don't go to the Suda, don't be involved in the Suda. Many argued it was a case of life and death. If we don't go, the king is going to hate us and the king is going to kill us. They said, we have to go. And Mordechai said, don't go to the Suda. Don't go. Okay, they went. They went. They held those life and death. They went. 9 years later, Haman comes along and starts wearing a little thing around his neck. Little, whatever it is, a little geshki around his neck. And he's making everyone bow down to him. And everyone bows down to him, knowing that, again, he works for the king. If he works for the king, who knows what's going to be? So everybody bows down to him. Who doesn't bow down to him? Mordechai. Mordechai says, it's usher to bow down to him, and he refuses to bow down to Haman, knowing that there might be an achshash of avodah zarah. He refuses to bow down. Immediately what happens? Haman goes and makes a gezerah against the Jews to destroy all of them. Absolutely every single one of them. Minarva ducking. Everybody's going to be gone. See, because of what Mordechai did. And what does the Gemara Megillah say? The Gemara Megillah tells us that they asked for Shimon bar Yochai, what's the reason why the Jews of that generation had to be destroyed? Why was there a Gezeiras Shmat? It's the answer the Gemara gives. It's because they went to the party of Ahasuerus. Who would have thought that? 9 years earlier. And the only way that it happened is by Mordechai not bowing down to Haman. You think it's an easy answer. Why was there a smile? Because Mordechai did something silly. Because Mordechai did something like that, and therefore everything happened after that. That's not the reason. The real reason why it all happened had no shaykhus to Mordechai. It had shaykhus to what happened years earlier. Just it appeared, it occurred at this moment in time. It appeared later on. So the Bnei Yisrael will be a little bit confused. That's the idea of Emunas Chachamim. Had they listened to Mordechai, even though they wouldn't have understood it, maybe they never would have seen the results of their actions. But nothing would have happened 9 years later. When Mordechai refuses to walk, bow down to Haman, nothing would have happened. Haman would have tripped over his own feet and died. That's what would have happened. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. You could apply it to this week's Parsha by the Akedah. Why in the world is Yitzchak Avinu listening to Avraham Avinu? Why? For what? Granted, Avraham Avinu was a Navi, a very low-level Navi. There's a Chsam Sofer in the Pituchei Chosam, which is his introduction to the Chelek in Yoredei in his Shalos V'Tshuvos. It says that Avraham Avinu was not a high-level Navi. He was a low-level Navi, and he wanted to be that way so he could continue teaching people, a very low-level Navi. The Sultan was saying, and he was right, Avraham, you messed up the Nebuah. V'haleu la'ola does not mean Shachtam is an Ola. It means bring him up as an Ola, but it doesn't literally mean Shachtam. He was right. The Sultan was 100% right. But Avraham understood that it was that Yitzchak should be a korban. Yitzchak never got the Nebuah. You know what's crazy? It's not even Yitzchak's, it's not even his Nisayim. It's not even a test. Because if you had the amount of Emunas Chachamim that Yitzchak had in Avraham Avinu, if you believed in your Rebbe the same way he did, it wouldn't be a test if your Rebbe would come up to you and ask to shech you in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You'd accept it wholeheartedly. That's not a test. It's exactly what Yitzchak stood for. Because that's the level of Emunas Chachamim. Now the problem is, who is this chacham? Who is this gadol that you have to listen to? Who's on that level to be there? Now, every person is different. And everyone has choices, and everybody needs somebody that understands them. But Rabbi Dr. Jerry Loeb, has a shiur that he gave about 4 years ago, in which he listed the criteria, and I brought them to three different big gaonim, and they all three of them 100% agreed with it. There are four different ways of finding out who is somebody that you... This is the chacham. Number one, a person who knows Kol HaTorah Kula. Now, it could be that he's not holding in Kol HaTorah Kula at all times. That's a possibility. Not everyone is holding in Menachos Dav Peivav. That's a possibility. But regardless, somebody who knows Kol HaTorah Kula or has gone, seen, understands Kol HaTorah Kula, and that includes Halacha and every other part to it. Not just learning Shas, but I mean knowing what's going on everywhere in Shas. Number two, Avas Klal Yisrael. He loves not just his constituents and the people that act like him. He loves all of Klal Yisrael, including people that are not religious, including people that argue vehemently, vociferously against everything that you stand for, everything. People that hate who you are, you love them anyway. That gadol loves them anyway and shows Ava for all of Klal Yisrael, no matter who they are or what they're doing. Number three, there's more to it. Midos Tovos. Good character traits. You see him and he acts in the right way, he speaks in the right way, he does the right thing, the way he eats, the way he talks, the way he walks, the way he does everything. Midos Tovos. That he acts in the right way. And number four, somebody who understands different people. And understands that he's not molding you or putting his ideas upon you, but understands there are different types of people and everyone needs something different. If a person contains aspects or the full ideas of these four, that's the level of Emunas Chacham you have. And if a person is perfect in all four of these criteria, if you have all these four in the best possible way, I don't know that many people like this, but if somebody has that, that's where the top level of Emunas Chacham is there, and then you go a little bit down as it goes down from there. You find people around that. Again, you don't want to take certain people out and point them out to, but you can think of certain people that you've met in your lifetime that 100% fit these criteria. That they know all of Torah. They're perfectly fine with anybody in Klal Yisrael. Their midos are exemplary, and they understand different people and give them advice based on where they are and not who, what they want. There are people like that. And when you find them, those are the people you want to be around. But what happens to us? We have Yetzer Hara. Confuses us. You know what the Yetzer Hara does? Again, the Yetzer Hara is brilliant. He will get you to see that gadol in his one moment of weakness. There's a moment of weakness where that gadol, for whatever reason, something happens and he gets angry at somebody. Or he does something. And you see him at that moment and he says, that guy's not a gadol. That guy's not a Talmud Chacham. That guy doesn't know what he's talking about. That's not the person that I have. You ask him a certain question where for some reason he's thinking about something else and he just can't think of the answer at that moment. Just can't think of it. Just, it's not in his head. Or he answers Chas V'Shalom the wrong way because he's thinking about something else or he's not in the subject, not in the Indian. He only remembers it later on. He's like, that guy's not there. That guy's not holding. He's just not like everybody else. I hear that. And that's hard. And that's what the Yetzer Hara does. He's destructive. And he finds the weaknesses, those things that you know you don't want to see in your rabbi, and he makes the rabbi do them at exactly the moment that you're looking at that rabbi. He does it. It's a brilliant move. A great maneuver. It's a chess move. It's a chess move. But don't throw yourself back because of that. Don't just say to yourself that you can't have the standards of Ramosha Feinstein in our generation. You just can't. Ramosha Feinstein lived a day that was 36 hours long. If I had 36 hours long in my day, I'd also be Ramosha Feinstein. Well, no, I wouldn't. I'd still be me. I would just be a guy who's wasting 8 extra hours. That's probably what it would end up being. But he had extra hours in his day. Well, what do you want? If I had those extra 12 hours, I would do it. I mean, 36 hours, of course. But Moshe was able to do everything he did because he had all those extra hours. I mean, that's what made him so great. Just days were longer back then, I guess. They utilize their time a little bit better. You can't expect that out of people that are left out. So what do you expect? You have expectations. They should be, but they have to be realistic. And these four criteria are realistic. Really realistic. That define Gedolim and help you understand what they should. And it also helps you. You want to understand how to be a good person? You want to understand what should be your criteria of growing up and becoming somebody great? Forget about the Emunas Chachamim aspect. Forget about asking for advice on things that he doesn't necessarily understand. How would he know if I should buy this house? What, is he a real estate genius? What is he? How could he do that? How would he know if I should buy this car or not? What, does he know cars really well? What does he do? Is he Carfax? Why should I just go on Carfax? I hear the question. It's a great question. But if he is the conduit that allows things to come down, and the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being not spoken through his mouth, no one's Moshe Rabbeinu, there is no Nevuah, it's even a very low level of Ruach HaKodesh, but if he's the conduit, he's the allowance for these things to be said in front of you. And if we don't have too many abilities to have that, we have no Urim Bitumen, we have no Nevi'im, we have no, not so many great people like that, then you have to understand, the message that he's giving you is something great. There were people who believed that every word the Chafetz Chaim said was literally the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Literally the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was a man who went to go ask the Chafetz Chaim a question. He wanted to ask him one simple question. And that was it. That was all he had to say. And he said he didn't understand, should he remain in his business? Or should he go into more something else that dealt with more of a something for Klal Yisrael. He was very successful in his business. He was giving money away, but he had an opportunity to join something for Klal Yisrael, and he wasn't sure what to do. No idea what to do. So he went to go see the Chafetz Chaim, to go ask the Chafetz Chaim Akasha. He went into the Chafetz Chaim, walked inside, and the Chafetz Chaim was benching. Chafetz Chaim was benching. He sat down, waiting for the Chafetz Chaim to finish, and the Chafetz Chaim said certain words in benching out loud. Certain words that he just said out loud as he was there. The man got up, started to leave. So somebody was there, turned to the man and said, what happened? You just came down to sit down in front of the Chafetz Chaim. Now you're getting up and you're leaving. What's the problem? He's like, man, my question was answered. He said, what do you mean your question was answered? He said, all I had to do was watch the Chafetz Chaim bench. That's all I had to do. And I realized, if I do this other job, I'm going to be closer to the Chafetz Chaim. I'm going to be able to see him more often. I'm going to be able to be around him more often. That was my message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I know what my answer is. I don't have to ask him a thing. He got up and he left. And that was it. That was it. There's unbelievable things in this world, messages that we're seeing. Don't be fooled by the Satan. Allow these messages to go through whatever conduit it's supposed to go, because you're there. You get a thought in the middle of your Shemona Esrei, if it comes up in the middle of your Shemona Esrei, it's not about some video game they might want to play, it's not about a movie, it's not about a TV show, it's not about sports, it's not anything, it's just a thought of something, that's a real thought. Take it in. Understand what that is. Ask about it. See what somebody has to say about it. But there's a reason why you're giving messages in the middle of your Shemona Esrei while you're talking to God. Because sometimes He does talk back. Just weird methods of getting it back to you. Find out what it is. So this is our third part of this Hashkafa. Trying to understand where Emunas Chachamim comes into play and why it's so important. We're going to continue on this different line, but a different idea for next week. We'll stop with this right now. Have a good day.